So, we really gonna do this?
Yeah, let's go. Hey guys, welcome to Dirtbag Asians, a podcast where two wandering dirtbags talk about Asian issues, life on the road, and work-life balance. I'm your co-host, Vang Nguyen.
And I'm Emile Young. Right now we're in Imsouane, a small fishing and surfing village in Morocco. This week on our podcast, we have a special guest. She comes from Osaka, Japan, and she is a sponsored surfer and also a true dirtbag at heart. So we have with us Mari Ota, who will be telling us her story on this week's episode. So for the people listening, you can't see that Mari actually has really impressive dreadlocks. Mm.
There's a big nest.
Yeah.
A dreadlock nest.
Yeah.
It's really cool seeing it when you're surfing. Like, at first, I just saw, you know, how people look tiny when they're far away. Mm-hmm. So I saw, like, oh, there's a really good kid who's surfing. and then I saw the hair, and I'm like, oh, that's Mari. Because, like, your hair is just, like, whipping around when you're surfing. And
sometimes dread contour me, you know. Maybe this is Mari.
On this trip, when did you start traveling?
Yeah, nearly 3 years ago. Yeah, actually, I just wanted to come to Europe. Uh-huh. And yeah, I got the visa in Denmark for 1 year. And then, yeah, time passed so quickly.
It's been 3 years since then, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And I think Marie's been traveling on a shoestring budget. So you don't have a car.
Yeah, no.
And so you're traveling around with a surfboard and a backpack.
Yeah.
And you're hitchhiking.
Yeah, then guitar.
And you've got a guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you get down to Morocco? And how long did it take you from when you left Denmark?
Well, actually, I took nearly 2 months.
Yeah.
Pretty sure. Yeah. Because I have no phone, then yeah. I cannot see the day.
Yeah.
I just feel the season.
Well, what is it like traveling with no phone? I think that's something most people cannot do today.
Yeah. Actually, like, everyone, people ask me, why? Yeah, just like, I have no phone. Why? But like nearly 10, 20 years ago, we didn't have a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I can't even imagine trying to navigate and travel with the car without a phone now.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, like I was really surprised when you told me that because I thought I was pretty late on adopting phones. But yeah, you're still phone free. Yeah, it's kind of amazing that you've been able to hitchhike and kind of get where you're going.
Yeah.
But I guess it takes a bit more time.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But yeah. I can see more life front of me more than you guys.
Yeah. You get to experience more. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of part of the trials and tribulations, the challenge of traveling. Mm-hmm. And for you, I guess that's just part of traveling. Like, you don't care about getting to the place where you're going. The fastest and most efficient way.
Yeah.
It's like the journey is more of the experience.
Yeah.
How do you see that's different from someone who has their phone always?
Yeah, actually, look, like when you arrive to the country, go out from airport, you already have an idea that which way you go.
Yeah.
Front or right or left. For me, like when I arrive, I look around, it's like, I still don't know, like behind the building is what's happened. Mm-hmm. Like I don't see the map. I don't know which side should I go. I really need to have a good luck also. And then... Yeah, always like a little bit scary to step, like fast step to go. Which side should I look?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never get a bad problem. Always meet a really good people. For sure, easy to ask to Google, but also nice to ask to local like people. Sometimes like I won't ask one stuff, but they tell me more stuff. Like I have a really, like I'm really rich.
Yeah, that's definitely like a richness of interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, like, I'm not so rich at all. And, you know, if I want to eat good stuff, maybe I can go to a restaurant and pay it. But even I don't know which restaurant I should go. I cannot ask to Google.
Yeah.
And then try to hitchhike in. People pick me up, bring me to house to cook, like, I don't know, not typical food, but home food from the country, you know. It's much nicer to eat people make for me than restaurant. Yeah, then also I can help somehow cleaning or we can share something good moment.
Mm-hmm. For that same reason, I've never used a Lonely Planet while traveling.
Yeah.
I go by word of mouth more.
I think in the early 2000s, like Lonely Planet, like, travel guide was a really big thing.
Yeah.
And if every traveler used a Lonely Planet, you always end up going to the same places and kind of, so I at some point I thought, okay, I don't want to use that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then trying to just find your own way through other means.
Yeah.
For me, when I get to the destination, the richness of the experience is just meeting people.
Yeah,
like, true. We met you and Aziz. And for the last couple of days, we've been hanging out. Mm-hmm. Last night, we had a great kind of grilled fish dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's definitely better with a group of people, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and we've been surfing together and stuff as well. I kind of wonder if you just have more of those kind of experiences mm-hmm. throughout your trip. Whereas we drove for a week, basically, from Peniche to get here, and we didn't really meet any people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're not meeting people. We get to a location, and then we start meeting people.
Yeah,
but in part it's because we were trying to work to a very specific time schedule. I guess if you're short on time, it's a good way to travel, but you do miss out on the richness of what you could see. Mm-hmm. And you only experience the surface when you're always planning everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't plan, then you can truly dive deep.
Yeah,
I think that touches on that idea again, where when we travel in a certain way, if it's too efficient, we miss out on these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these experiences kind of take time.
It takes
just like this organic interaction. Things just happen and you meet people and it happens in a very unexpected way.
Yeah.
It was like for us, I guess we only met you because we were parked in a van and you and his sister walked past and you kind of said hello.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't have happened if we were staying in a hotel.
True.
We checked in, we're by ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, true.
I often think that technology sort of inoculates us or insulates us from having experiences.
Yeah, I think that's kind of part of that whole social dilemma kind of issue of what technology is doing to us. And I think with the traveling that we're doing and meeting people like yourself, and when I hear that, it kind of reinforces the point that it does have an impact, because there are people like you who are still traveling in a certain way without a phone and you're doing it more, I guess, organically with time. And I think last episode we talked about kind of time. And most of us feel like we don't have enough time. Yeah, and we're always kind of rushing, right?
Yeah. I could see that. But yeah, actually, why they are so rushed?
Yeah.
For what? Now, like, everyone has a phone, everyone has a job. They think that, okay, 1 hour, I can make this much money.
Yeah.
Then for that, they are really rushed. But they are really poor because they don't know how to cooking well or washing the clothes they never done.
Yeah.
Then some people think that they can buy time.
Yeah, and time is the one thing that you really can't buy.
Yeah.
You can buy it in the sense that you need money to not have to work, and then you have time to do things. But I guess often we get into this trap where once you earn a lot of money and then you have a lot to lose, then it's harder to give up.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a very comfortable life and you're living in the city and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very hard to give that up and say, okay, I'm not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually you've got a mortgage and you're paying that off. But I think you only need to kind of do that once to kind of experience it. And then afterwards, I think your thinking changes.
Mm-hmm.
When I left Australia, there was a lot of worry, I guess, from my parents and friends. And they thought I was on my way to financial ruin. Mm-hmm. And I was very unsure. I thought, I don't know. Yeah, maybe they are right.
Yeah.
But I think maybe 3 to 4 months into the trip, I remember I was in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it was like in April, the weather was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, it's worth it, because this and the people that I met and what I was doing, I thought this is kind of one of these moments that even if no matter what happens, like, I'm glad that I left and that I got to experience this. I think once that happens, something changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my view about financial security and what I want from life and what I really need, maybe I started thinking and questioning it more. What was it like for you? Why did you start traveling and doing what you did?
Actually, first time when I started traveling, because I wanted to quit the job.
To quit?
I was around 20 years old. I started surfing, then I wanted to go to Indonesia.
Uh-huh.
Then also I wanted to stop the job because every day I go job, and in Japan we work quite a long time.
Yeah.
And then just back to home, eat dinner, take shower, sleep. And then wake up, go job. It's like every day like this.
Yeah.
And then I start to think that, what am I doing? Like, how is my life if I keep doing like this?
Mm-hmm.
One day I realized, oh no, I'm 50 years old. What did I get, you know, from job? Maybe money, maybe skill, but nothing special for my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I couldn't have my time, thus I really didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I wanted to stop to work. Then I was thinking, like, how can I say to parents?
Mm-hmm.
No, but like, if just like, no, just I don't want,
mm-hmm.
then for sure that the parents say, like, hey, this is Mali, Japan is not, need to work, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Need to marriage, have a kid, and have a family, then, but like, it was not my choice.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Somehow I want to stop, but then for that I needed to have some, how to say, purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Then I said, okay, like, if I say I want to leave Japan, for sure that I can stop the, I quit the job.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That was my idea then. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, so you were 20, you quit your job.
Yeah.
And then you met some cool people. They taught you how to surf.
Yeah.
And then you got very good at surfing and you were about 24.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so what happened between 24 and 30? And when did you leave Japan the first time to go overseas?
Yeah, when I was, I'm not sure, 25 years old, I think. Like, yeah, I had a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Actually, I had the idea to go to Australia with working holiday visa.
Yeah.
But it's so difficult to ask that I want to go to somewhere 1 year, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, as in, so it wasn't really an option for you to travel and go together.
Yeah. He couldn't because he's older than, much older than me, and then he has no chance to take visa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, was he also in a different stage of life?
Yeah.
He didn't want to go on a working holiday visa to Australia.
Then he also had a job.
Yes.
And he didn't want to quit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He's typical Japanese, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not typical Japanese, but yeah. I mean, like, I need to work, it has no money, cannot go traveling. Then if quite a job, if pretty afraid that they can get a job again.
Yeah.
No.
Mm.
So when you left, did you have a lot of money? Or you had no money and you left anyway?
I had some money.
Yeah.
Not enough money, but I had money.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what would stop most people. Most people, when they got to the point where they thought, I don't really have enough money, then you don't leave.
Yeah.
But you
just left.
Yeah.
So you left and you thought, okay, I'll make money along the way.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, somehow I can get the money. Yeah.
And it worked and it was okay.
It was.
So what do you do for money?
Actually, first year in Australia, I couldn't speak English well. So it's so difficult to find a job.
Yeah.
Then I work in the Japanese restaurant, but it's
under the table.
Yeah. You get the half pay. But your life is in Australia.
Mm.
Yeah.
So
it's expensive.
Yeah. But the other way, like, you have a tent, then kind of easy to live also.
Well, as in your living costs were very low.
Mm.
Yeah. So if you have a tent and you don't have to pay for a house and
stuff. Yeah. And then,
one of the things about, I guess, being a dirtbag is being very comfortable with dealing with uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
I think for many people, it's very scary when, if you leave the country without enough money and not being certain that, okay, in 6 months, I'll have enough money to travel or to pay my rent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I assume that you've probably become very comfortable with uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because for me, now it seems like you're very comfortable with uncertainty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did that happen pretty much straight away or did it take a long time?
No, actually, I'm fine without money.
Yeah.
Like, even when I'm in Australia, one day I had $2.
Yeah.
But I got the accident.
Yeah.
And then I needed to go to hospital.
Yeah.
Is it this one?
Yeah, this one.
Okay.
Need to pay $126 for stitch.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went to hospital, stitch, then I cannot pay.
Yeah.
And then I need to find a job to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, you have $2. $126 is too big.
Yeah.
Right.
So then what?
What did you do?
Actually, I got the quick job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was making dumpling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to don't pay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But actually, I took 2 months for pay that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I back after 2 months. Mm-hmm. I'm really sorry to late.
Yeah.
But I bring money. Then, wow, thank you very much for back.
Yeah, you surprised them.
Yeah,
but anyway, on that moment, I go some garden or park,
mm-hmm.
you know, like dandelion leaves or like some
wild leaves.
Mm-hmm. We pick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I pick. Yeah. And I was eating.
Yeah, wow. So to pass the debt, you had to kind of not buy food and eat.
Really zero money, still I can eat.
Yeah,
just go on the beach and pick some shellfish.
Cool.
Yeah, somehow like
easy. Yeah.
For eat, it's okay.
I think once you experience it and you know you can survive even with nothing, then I think it didn't give you a sense of confidence, I guess. Like you're, and you feel secure. You go, no matter what happens to me, you know, I'll go and harvest some seafood or go fishing or whatever.
Has that ever happened to you?
I don't think I've ever become that poor. and this is why I think I'm probably not like a true dirtbag, because working in software engineering, I've always had the option when I needed money.
Pick up another job.
Yeah, like the first time I was in Canada, I ran out of money during the winter.
Yeah.
And I got a job in New Zealand, and I packed my bags and flew there within 2 or 3 days. Yeah, so within a week, I was working from living as a ski bum and skiing every day to being in New Zealand, and then I'm back in the office working and then getting paid pretty well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, being a dirtbag, we lack that safety net that most people... I guess most people find this very scary because you get further and further away from the safety net.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is that you can kind of show that, okay, you have no health insurance and then you just pay your hospital bill, but it all kind of works out eventually, right? Yeah. So maybe in the Western world, we're too safe. We're overinsured. Yeah, because I remember when I lived in Australia, I had like life insurance, I had health insurance.
I was
super insured. And then at some point when I just cancelled all the insurance. And I travelled for a while without that. And now I'm back to, I'm insured in Denmark. Yeah, but we're in Morocco. So yeah, it's this kind of balance of how much safety net do I need?
Yeah.
And then how... And if it's necessary, by you doing what you do, and you're still alive and you're still okay now. Yeah.
With all these uncertainties, why is it worth it? As dirtbags, we kind of understand this is all in order to pursue for you surfing and this lifestyle. But why do you do it?
Why? Wow, that's a good question. Wow, that's a really good question. Why do I do? I like. Actually, if I possible to live without money, it's great.
Be completely self-sufficient, like you provide everything for yourself. Okay.
If I could, it's super fun.
How will you do that while you're going to so many different places?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I have no idea. But actually, before I had some pot with me, chili pot and tomato and...
So you were hitchhiking with... not only your surfboard, guitar, backpack, tent, but also these pots of plants and...
a small garden.
It start to completely difficult hitchhiking. Yeah.
So it sounds like you need a van
or
a car and then you can put everything.
Yeah,
because you're basically doing this, but you're hitchhiking with all the stuff you have
Yeah, even one space is not enough, you know. One seat is not enough for pick me up.
Yeah. The other reason why many travelers, they don't want to travel when they don't have money is because immigration and customs. So have you ever had problems because of that?
Yeah. When I fly to USA,
yeah.
The moment, yeah, they ask me, how much do you have on cash?
Yes.
And then, cash? 2,000 euro, I said. But I had, I think, 100 or 200.
Yeah.
And then, after they asked me, like, no, impossible, you have not enough money. What are you going to do? Like, they said, okay, like, show me your bank account, blah, blah, blah. How I can show you my bank account? Like, I have no phone, no internet. Like, impossible. And then they said, okay, use my computer. I give you 5 minutes. I had not enough time.
Yeah.
And then they say, no, you don't show me means you don't want to show me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they let you into the US?
No. Yeah. They say like you cannot come.
Oh, really?
Like, come in.
Yeah.
And then they send me to San Francisco. So you cannot sleep here, so you wait until ready to
for the flight.
Then they send me to San Francisco with handcuffs.
Yeah. American immigration.
Yeah.
Well, it's super hard.
I wanted to pick a teeth brush or, you know, like, flight is 12 or 14 hours.
Yeah.
And then you want to do something, you know, like wash face or wash teeth or.
Yeah.
But they say, like, you cannot touch your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just you go. 24 hours or something, I was waiting.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Then, Mali, ready. Let's back to Auckland Airport.
Oh, yeah.
And then, put again, handcuffs, then back to Auckland Airport.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Then, again, like, I stay here, wait.
Yeah.
And then again, like, I don't know, around 10 hours.
Yeah.
I just wait. And then, again, they ask, where you want to go? You ask now. So until now, what did you do? You know?
Yeah.
I was thinking like you were ordering my ticket.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Then why you bring me back? I thought because of the ready to flight.
Yeah.
But like again, where you want to go? What? I said Japan. And then okay. I will check it. And then again, wait a couple of hours. Mali, let's go.
Yeah.
Ready.
Yeah.
Oh really? Yeah, come. And they actually bring me in front of the flight.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then I look, like, all people are waiting for only me, you know?
Oh, okay, yeah. So they put you as the last passenger on a flight.
Yeah. Japan. They are waiting for me. Yeah, I was thinking like, Japan.
Yeah.
Like I started to, you know, after I say Japan, I'm starting to think like, oh, miso soup, maybe onigiri, what I can eat first, you know?
Yeah.
I was dreaming to eat some Japanese food.
Yeah.
Then I ask, where I go?
Yeah.
Barcelona. No,
yeah.
I don't go.
Yeah.
Then I start to hold the door. No, I don't go.
Yeah.
And then, come on.
So they just wanted to put you on any plane
to
get you out of the country.
And then, what the fuck, I cannot go. I told you that only Schengen is impossible to go because I have no visa.
Yeah.
And then they choose
Barcelona.
Of course, when I jump off, they are waiting. The immigration is waiting for me.
Yeah.
Mali, come.
Yep.
And then I go with them. Then, he said to me, do you know you cannot entry to Schengen because you already stayed before?
Yeah.
And then, just I tell them,
just
I tell to American immigration that I cannot come.
Yeah.
Then they said, so you need to back to Auckland Airport.
Yeah, send you back.
Yeah, they said, like, I have to send you
back. Yes,
to Auckland.
Which is,
But you know, wait. I fly from Rome and some Auckland Airport back to Barcelona, Auckland Airport. So maybe again somewhere.
Yeah.
And then back again.
Yeah.
Then he said, your life is in the sky.
Yeah.
And I said, no way, please.
Yeah.
And then, he asked me, what you gonna do?
Yeah.
What can I do?
Yeah.
And then, also he asked me the way you couldn't go to USA. Because of the money.
Yeah.
And then, so you need to make money.
Yeah.
You have a guitar?
Yeah.
Okay, ready.
Yeah.
You start from airport.
Yeah.
And then he said I give you free.
Yeah.
I make you free and then give me stamp.
Oh, yeah. That's so nice.
Yeah, then I could enter Spain again.
Yeah. For how long?
And he said 1 month or 2 months you should leave. Better leave. I stay for 1 month.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
okay. Yeah, that's very kind of human.
It was very sweet.
It was like that time you overstayed the parking in Italy. Like, if it had been in, say, maybe Copenhagen, they would have fined you the full amount.
Yeah, so what happened was I flew from Rome as well to Copenhagen for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And then I got sick. Like, I caught the flu or something, and I was sick for probably over a week.
Oh, yeah.
So I left my car at the airport, and I had paid for, I think, 2 weeks of parking or 3 weeks. And I thought it would be fine because I was only paying €5 a day or something.
Uh-huh.
And then I flew back to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to pay for the parking, it was like €600 for the parking fee because the normal rate is, I think, €30 or €40 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I stayed by an extra 10 or 15 days or something.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is terrible. So I went to the parking ticket office and I explained to the guy, I paid for 2 or 3 weeks and I overstayed because I was very sick and I was still like very sick then as well. And then he just took the ticket and he cancelled it. Mm. And I was like, wow, like I'd never expected that. I thought I would have to pay something and I'd have to negotiate.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also, wow, this guy was, it was really nice about it. Like he didn't even actually make me pay for those extra days.
Oh.
Yeah.
You feel like you're interacting with a person, like they're being very generous.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, whereas some interactions, the people that you're interacting with, they don't treat you like a person. Mm. They're like, that's the rule. And they just apply the rules. Even if they're going to send you from Oakland to Barcelona backwards and forth.
Yeah.
But the Spanish guy, obviously, was an actual human.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he treated you as a human, which I think is, it makes you kind of have more faith in humanity.
Mm. Like, when I really need help, I met more, like, flexible person.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm quite lucky. Like, yeah, in USA, I was maybe unlucky, quite unlucky.
Yeah.
But yeah, usually, I met quite good people. Yeah, I'm lucky. Yeah.
What's the toughest part?
Yeah, actually, when I arrived to Barcelona, they said, okay, you can be free.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't know where I can go.
Yeah.
And then I have not much money.
Yeah.
So actually, I spent 2-3 weeks at the Barcelona airport.
Oh, okay.
Directly, I just start to live in the airport.
Yeah. Okay.
Sleep there, play there, eat there. Every day, I just waiting for passing the time, you know.
Yeah. To decide what to...
Yeah, what can I do? Where I can go? Or,
yeah.
Yeah. I had 2 friends of number
in
my notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Then one, she's Japanese, but she was in Spain.
Right.
Then one is, he's Italian, but he also was in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Then I tried to call.
Yep.
Yes, I have no idea to what can I do.
Yeah.
I call to Italian guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now he answered, why you call me? You know, because like, hey, this is Mali. You need to speak a little bit quickly because I have no match coin.
Yeah.
Then it's a public phone.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then I'm in Barcelona airport. I don't know what can I do.
Yeah.
If you want to catch me, you can catch me.
Yeah.
And then finish the phone. So. And then after, 2-3 weeks, he passed the airport.
Yeah.
Because he was back in the Milan.
Ah, oh, Milan. Milan.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Then he was coming to Valencia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he passed Barcelona.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he was driving?
Yeah, he was driving. Then he just come to airport to look for me.
Uh-huh.
Then I was there. You were still here. Yeah.
I'll be waiting for you.
And then, I moved from airport. Finally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So despite all of that, you know, do you ever think, oh, this is just too difficult and it's not worth it and I'm going to go home and get a job? And,
no, actually, airport life was so funny.
Yeah.
You know, so, if you fly, you come, for sure, a couple of hours you are there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you stay 1 day, 2 days, you can see that the same type of person, who stuck there.
Oh.
You know, some people got a problem with credit card or something, they cannot fly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, some of them are same face, you know.
Yeah.
Then I always play the guitar.
Yeah.
And then front of smoking area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the full smoke
has
come often, you know.
You see this pattern in everyday life.
Start to this guy I saw before. This guy also I saw before. This guy yesterday also I saw. You know? Then start to I can see the life.
Yeah.
And then start to what's happened to you, what's happened to me, and blah, 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 why you stay at the airport so long time.
It's
also fun.
Become an airport local. That's your community.
Yeah. Then also some people when waiting for the flight, they are drinking alcohol, but it's ready to flight, cannot bring this alcohol, and then all come to me, you know?
Yeah.
Drink this alcohol, and then I have a lot of coins, coins.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And then I'm going to flight, so take this food.
So people are kind.
Yeah, it was kind, and I never felt very hungry or thirsty or nothing. I was fine.
Yeah. So throughout all of that, you thought all of that was actually an interesting experience, and you would do it again. Yeah. or if it happens again, then you're not. So that's another thing that you're not too worried about now. You're worst comes to worst, I'll just live at the airport and you know what it's like now.
Yeah. 2-3 weeks I could enjoy, but maybe not a year. But first experience it. For sure, a little bit nervous.
Mm-hmm.
But even nervous, even cry, even angry, nothing happened.
Yeah. If it's going to happen, it will happen. It's not a very spiritual belief, but just sort of a trust in the universe.
I don't think about it in terms of trust, but I think about it in terms of what you think and what reality is.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So most people think that reality is a certain way, and then maybe what actually happens is quite different. And then it's like, well, do you adjust your model?
Exactly.
Like our parents are a good example.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like my parents think that every country is dangerous and you're going to get robbed and killed. But when I travel, the reality is not like that. You know, it's there are certain places that are dangerous and they're usually like southern France where you're around a city and there are just a lot of people who want to rob you. But like in Morocco, if you've never been here, I guess a lot of our parents might be concerned. But the reality here is that I think it's actually, I feel quite safe here. There's a lot of police checks and people are very helpful.
It helps generous. We have the right passport though. With an Australian passport and an American passport, they look at it and they want to practice their English more than they want to give us trouble. Here in Morocco.
And then the locals that we meet, you know, it's, it's just that if you have a certain expectation, if reality is kind of different.
Do you adjust to it or do you adjust, deny it and just say,
and
this
keep
is an
your
exception.
Kind of, you know, the world is kind of dangerous kind of model. And that would cause stress and anxiety.
Do you think it's also because you're a young male traveler and even when you travel alone, you, there are certain kinds of unwanted attention that if you travel alone as a female in particular places that you can get? Like, for example, you were saying that even though Morocco is very safe, sometimes you still feel like, really, I don't want this kind of attention. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, that's true.
Or I was, when we just arrived in the port in Nador in Morocco, you were getting some SIM cards and I was sitting in the car watching the van. And two guys who were having coffee from across the street, I accidentally looked at them, and I probably smiled, and they immediately waited for Vang to leave the van to get the SIM cards, and then as soon as he was gone, they came over and started knocking, and said, hey, hey, you in there, like, comment ça va? And then, in a, you know, French in a kind of African accent, and they kept trying to ask my name, can I talk to them, and I just, you know, I'm sitting in a van, I'm perfectly safe. I wasn't afraid, but I was a little annoyed because it was the kind of attention I didn't want right then.
I met the England guy. He said, come to England. Then he said that he does ice cream truck. Food truck.
Okay.
Ice cream.
An ice cream truck.
Then he said, you are lovely. You can work with me. Then he said that I'm going to buy a ticket for you, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't go because I could see he's not nice. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm very poor. So sometimes something very sweet for me, you know? I give you a job, it's very sweet. Because of which I want. But, sometimes that situation, I really need to be careful because if they're a guy, you can imagine what they want to do.
They're taking advantage.
I couldn't feel good energy from him, so I didn't go.
So it's definitely different between males and females to a certain extent, but it's the same kind of idea. As a female, you have to figure out what the reality is for you. And for me, I guess I don't experience that and I don't think about certain things. But I guess the overlap between us is probably much greater, I think, than the differences.
Definitely. How do they see you when you return to Japan?
Sometimes some people try to attack me. What are you doing? Like, you need to feel hard and some stress with job and make money. Then 2-3 days you can go Busan or Taiwan or, you know, Guam. Or like, you cannot live like just happy.
So work for 90% of the time, 95%, and then take like a little bit of holidays.
I think it's a little bit of the jealous, and then some people are like, fucking cool, you should keep doing. Some of my friends are pushing me, but some people say, like, what's the purpose to go traveling?
So
like,
what is the purpose to go traveling?
Actually, I really want to see more wave. Everywhere, and then people. I want to meet a lot of people. I don't know why I keep traveling. I don't know, but maybe because I really like.
Not all of our listeners are surfers. Most of them are not. What is so interesting about the different waves? Why are you chasing these special waves in these special places?
Like, it's not the same. If surfing La Bay or if surfing, I don't know, pipeline or totally change wave, no? And then I want to see why it's so changed, like how different wave is coming.
Yeah.
And what about the idea of just seeing beautiful places?
Yeah.
But being able to surf the wave as opposed to just going to the beach, having a look, taking a picture, and then going.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that's for me, that's a big part of it.
Mm.
Yeah, is that the same for you as well? Like you're kind of you travel to places more so to do something there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's quite a strong motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Like for us here, we drove from Portugal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we traveled for like a week basically to get here.
Yeah,
and it's basically just to surf, which sounds kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're gonna travel like 3,500 kilometers over a week by car. True. Basically just for a wave.
Yeah.
But because there are waves in Portugal, we could have just stayed in Portugal.
Yeah.
I think what makes it sound less crazy is if you think of it as all part of the experience.
Yeah.
You're not chasing... Actually, someone asked me recently what I was chasing, and he was very insistent that I was searching for something.
Yes.
And I had to say, you know, not in the way you think I'm searching for something.
Yeah, you're not trying to find
I'm not trying to find myself. I'm not trying to find... freedom or whatever it is you think I'm searching for. I am trying to find waves. And we live in a way where even though we're always in a different place, we're not really on vacation or tourists. We're living, and in that sense we're not chasing. We're not searching, besides chasing waves or chasing rock or good single track for mountain bike rides. Hey, so that concludes this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have and you're listening along, take a screenshot, hit the like button, and post it on social media. Help us grow. We grow by word of mouth. We're also on Instagram at Dirtbag Asians. So please connect with us there. Follow us. Let us know if there's specific content that you'd like to hear about. If you truly like this episode, we're also on Patreon at Dirtbag Asians. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah.
So, cool. Peace out. Or wait, Shaka.